Welcome to Solid Science, a podcast that is about soil.
Well, it's not about soil, but about its ecology and what we can learn from it. And it's about science.
Well, it's not about science, but how knowledge is produced. But it is about people.
It's not about people, but about their experiences.
Hi, I'm Romy, a young researcher that likes model-based and experimental work.
And I'm Carlos, two soil microecologists working in conservation ecology.
Today we will talk about the role of experiments in soil ecology, and we invited Nico Eisenhower to talk with us. Welcome, Nico. We want to talk about experiments in soil ecology today. So can you give us a short introduction about yourself?
Sure. Hello, everybody. Thanks a lot for the invitation. As requested, I come completely unprepared, so have fun. So experimental soil ecology means for me that we are mostly doing global change and biodiversity change experiments, and we study all aspects of soil life, ranging from microbes to meso to macrofauna, their activities, and also the ecosystem functions that depend on these organisms. And we are mostly doing experiments where we alter the weather, precipitation, temperature, different land use types. We manipulate the number of plant species in grassland and forests and look at below ground responses to these modifications.
Okay, great. And you said you do these experiments. So why are they needed? Why do you think they are needed in soil ecology, especially?
Yeah, I think it's really beautiful to study nature and all of the complexity that is out there in nature. Sometimes we have difficulties, though, understanding what's really going on in this complex nature. And this is why we try to simplify a little bit. We would like to look at specific relationships between changes that we are observing and then also ecological communities. So we need to decompose this complexity a little bit in order to get at causal relationships. And this is also the main purpose of these experiments, to look into nature, to look at observational studies, to observe potential drivers of soil biodiversity and ecosystem processes. And then we can generate hypotheses how communities could change in response to, for example, temperature change, precipitation change, land use change, and then we can actually test if this is really a significant and causal relationship.
So, Nico, you mentioned already several types of, let's call it, drivers that you are looking at, and even different types of organisms that you are also looking at. And I would guess that for every combination that you just mentioned, you would need a different type of experiment. So can you tell us what type of experiments do you typically work with? I'm guessing that some are in the field, some are not in the field, some are in microcosms even. Can you give us a bit of idea of what you were working with?
Sure. We try to bridge different spatial and temporal scales in our studies. As you mentioned, we have conducted experiments in really tiny micro titter plates, so in micro, you could even say nanocosms, where we look at microbial interactions. Then we are also basically looking into pots with soil and maybe some plants involved or so, and we manipulate different kinds of biotic interactions in microcosms in the lab, but also outside. We are running an Ecotron facility where we can have an even more realistic representation of above and below ground biodiversity. And then we are also involved in many field experiments. We are running several field experiments in grasslands and forests. We are also involved in global networks of distributed experiments like Nutrient Network and DroughtNet and BugNet and so on. So we are trying to use all scales that are relevant for the specific ecological questions that we have.
You mentioned the Ecotron. Can you tell us what it is for the ones that don't know what it is?
Sure. The IDF Ecotron is a mesocosm facility under controlled conditions. So basically a big hall. In this big hall, we have 24 so-called eco units. Those are mesocosms of either 50 centimeters in diameter or 1.5 times 1.5 meters. And we can then manipulate complex ecological communities above, below ground in these mesocosms. We can also change precipitation patterns and so on. And in addition to manipulating these communities and environmental conditions, we have also the capacity to do online measurements of many processes.
So you mentioned different types of things, from your what you call the nanocosm to something as big as a equatron that includes a massive soil core to be placed inside, or even field experiments like the Jenner experiment or NetNet. What are the main limitations? And because you also mentioned that it's beautiful to observe nature, but sometimes we cannot do everything there. What are the main limitations of experiments? So where are the boundaries of doing experimental ecology in terms of what you can get out of it?
Well, that's a tricky one. So imagine those microcosms where you essentially control a lot of environmental conditions and biotic interactions, then you can only look at a very limited set of species and interactions that are in the focus. And you are excluding a lot of variation that's commonly occurring in nature. And if you scale up, maybe in these mesocosms, you can look at more complicated communities involving microbes and animals and plants and also above and below ground. But still, you may miss some larger organisms like vertebrates or so that are also influencing how these communities behave. So you also have to, you always have to be aware of the limitations of experiments. And I think for me at the moment, the most exciting approach is to then compare our observational findings that we have from multiple monitoring initiatives, for example, or from data synthesis with our experimental work. I think those are really exciting complementary approaches where we can then compare and see, do we need another experiment involving another important driver? And this is also then showing us the boundaries that we are approaching over and over again.
So we are talking about these experiments. Some of them also run at a global scale. But if we look at soils, usually there are these local or context-dependent scales. So how does it fit together, these global experiments and these local effects on soil?
Yeah, this is really important because I think what we are always looking at in nature is a mixture of some global drivers or large-scale drivers and very local interactions and effects that are happening. You can have local consequences of changes in plant communities, for example. And then you have also certain inputs of fertilizers or pesticides that are influencing soil conditions. And then there are additional layers of complexity put on top, like different temperatures or precipitation. And again, I would say it's important to always clearly refer to the biotic and abiotic conditions you're conducting the experiment in. And then you can also try to compare the findings with other findings with observational studies where you have larger gradients of conditions. And I think, as I said before, that there can be nice complementary approaches here.
You mentioned something that caught my attention. So you're trying to change something at the that varies at the global scale or varies at the larger scale, let's put it like this, with a process that you are looking at the very local scale, yeah, or even micro scale. So the question that I have is, are these experiments representative of what is happening in nature, or are we just looking at an artifact within these natural processes?
Well, you're talking to an experimental ecologist, so I guess it's no surprise that I now tell you that these experiments are very useful. I think you always have to clearly describe the environmental conditions under which you perform an experiment. And then you're looking at specific drivers and interactions, and those can then clearly identified and tested, and they are relevant under these environmental conditions. And then maybe I do the same experiment under the next environmental conditions, and I can compare if I find the same or not. And I think this is also where the benefits of such global networks or of synthesis work, meta-analysis, come in, where you can then see also the context dependency of some effects. Effects of certain biotic interactions might not be the same everywhere. They might be modified by environmental conditions. And we have done a lot to try to get at this context dependency.
I don't disagree with that. And I also don't disagree that experiments are useful. I was not referring to the usefulness of them. I was just wondering, in terms of what makes an experiment a representative experiment of the process that you are looking at. Because remember, I was just remembering this paper from Lotte, for example, where she did basically a meta-analysis collating all the experiments or many of the experimental results. And as far as I remember from the paper, she did not necessarily arrive to a conclusion of what can make an experiment a representative experiment for the process that you are looking at. Being you, an experimental ecologist, what would be your suggestion? What would be your ideas related to this?
Yeah, I think I would caution a little bit to say that we only need realistic scenarios that we are manipulating, like current expectations of how climate changes. I can also give you an example. Roughly 10 years ago or 15 years ago, the Global Change Experimental Facility was designed in a way that tried to reproduce the climatic conditions that were at that time suggested to be in place in the year 2070 or 2100. Yeah, now we know actually that the climate change effects might even be stronger. So what we have experienced is an accelerated rate of climate change. What we have also experienced is extreme climatic conditions. And this is also an important factor that is influencing soil life. Extreme events that are occurring with increasing frequency. So I think as long as we clearly describe what are our research questions, what are the environmental conditions we are conducting an experiment in, I think it's also fair to maybe look at extremes. So I'm open to any experiment ranging from very mild modulations to harsh modifications.
Sorry, Nico, related to that, so being open to that range of possibilities allows us also to, I don't know, be creative in the way that we elaborate these experiments. But you said something that I think it's important, at least for us to clarify, because you said, well, while I like experiments, I don't think that they all should be realistic, or they should only be within the parameters of what realistic means. Yeah, or
what we think at the moment would be realistic.
That's exactly the point that I was going at.
Yeah.
Because when you say that they are not realistic, they still represent, I would guess, and that's the question for you, the natural environment where the organisms will play their roles. You are just putting what we think now are unrealistic conditions on the environmental conditions that are affected. Isn't this the case?
Yeah, I would say when I was referring to unrealistic, I meant more like a climate change scenario, for example, that we would at the moment see as one extreme scenario that is most likely, hopefully not happening, for example, but still in the range of possible outcomes.
I would like to pose a question now that you are very often asking to students. So for those who don't know you, Carlos and I, we have been working a long time in the experimental interaction ecology led by Nico. And what you always pose as a question, usually in the end of talks, is if you would have a bunch of money, how would you design an experiment? So what would be the perfect design of an experiment?
Yeah, so now you give me a lot of money and I can do whatever I like. So the next one, I assume.
Yes.
Then I, at the moment, I'm pretty interested in the different drivers that occur at the same time. I think this was work that we started several years ago, and I think there were also some really nice papers that came out in the last couple of years, for example, by Matthias Rillig's group, where different drivers in their interactions were manipulated and investigated. And I think there's huge potential to explore these interaction effects of multiple different drivers that co-occur. And if you give me a lot of money, Romy, then I would probably establish a global network of such experiments where we do, where we manipulate a set of different drivers, let's say 5 to 10 different global change drivers in their interactions. And we establish this at as many sites as possible to see how do they interact and under which conditions, again, coming back to this context dependency.
So what element does a perfect experiment then has to have? Because when you establish a global experiment, there are probably a lot of factors that you need to take care. So what are the elements for a good experiment?
I think what you need to have is really solid background information on your local conditions in terms of the environment. So having really good information on the conditions before you started the experiment is important. You need to have a proper control of the factors you are manipulating. You have to constantly observe. First of all, are your manipulations working? Are they in place? And I think you need to monitor regularly. This is what we now see in quite a lot of long-term data sets, that, for example, our work in the Jena experiment is so valuable because we measured very many ecosystem processes and also environmental conditions regularly over time for many years, multiple times per year. And this is now providing us a lot of insights. So I think these are really critical elements. And then what I also really like to highlight here is that we should then work in interdisciplinary ways to bring in as many researchers as possible to look at ecosystems in a comprehensive way. So measuring all kinds of processes, starting with chemical and physical conditions to all of the biotic players that are in such an ecosystem, this would be important for me.
So if you would now, for example, go for the global change effect on soil communities and also in the interactive way that you mentioned before, what would it mean to design such an experiment? So would you go for the global scale, and then what factors would you manipulate and how would you manipulate them?
Wow, now we are digging into the details, I guess. So I would probably base this selection on the most recent synthesis that we did. There is a meta-analysis hopefully coming out soon that we conducted on the different global change drivers on soil biodiversity. This was led by Helen Phillips and colleagues. And we could identify some important drivers, like drought was a really important factor, pesticides, other elements related to land use intensity. From another meta study, we know that it's also the plowing of soil and things like that. So I would base my selection on these main drivers. I would probably also include some drivers that we already know could play important roles, but have not been studied so far, at least not in that detail, like different kinds of pesticides in their interaction, and also microplastics. Yeah, and then I would design a protocol that is as clear as possible. Based on that protocol, we'll probably first establish an own experiment, see if it's clear enough, and then would invite others to contribute to that.
And maybe a follow-up question just out of curiosity. So if you say drought, how do you manipulate drought? What are the tools to do that?
You can remove the precipitation and use a roof for that. This is always a tricky question in our field studies, and we have seen that most of the work has been done with roofs, and these roofs cause all kinds of other side effects, artifacts that we would like to avoid or to control for. So I guess under field conditions, I'm now thinking about grassland experiments because they might be easiest to establish. I would still work with roofs, but these would be installed everywhere. And then it would be probably for such a network, it would have to be some mean reduction in precipitation. Yeah. While a more realistic scenario, maybe also a change in precipitation patterns that might be a little bit more tricky to establish at the global scale.
Yeah, because they should be standardized to then analyze the data in the same way.
So, Nico, you mentioned several ways of maybe going a bit deeper on the type of experiments that we do and how we manipulate these factors. And you also mentioned the value of having an experiment like the GEN experiment that has been collecting data for a long time. While that's true, one also of the main criticisms of such an experimental facility like GEN experiment or others, equivalent others in the world, is that they are really narrow in scope. Although they test many permutations of, for example, in the case of the GEN experiment diversity, they are really narrow in scope in terms of what we can find in reality or in nature, sorry. And because of that, part of the criticism is that because of that narrow scope, the conclusions may not be as powerful as if we could have other types of experiments, or if we combine them with, for example, experiments in agriculture or in forest or so on. So how does an experimental ecologist replies to this type of criticism?
Yeah, we have often been invited to already respond to such criticism. Sometimes we were even not invited to respond, but we did anyway. So I think, as said before, I think you have to be very careful with the interpretation of your findings. I think from such experiments like the Jena experiment, what we can nicely extract from it is mechanisms of biodiversity effects. If you have any change in local biodiversity due to different drivers, this might then result in certain ecosystem responses. And now there is quite some literature on the comparison of different experimental sites, for example, but also the comparison between experiments and natural communities. And what turns out is if you're properly controlling for environmental conditions, then you can actually also identify these biodiversity mechanisms in nature. So I don't agree with a narrow scope claim, as you can imagine, but I think being careful in what you are extracting from this, clearly stating that one-to-one comparisons to nature, just looking outside, is not possible. You have to then refer to the main mechanisms you would like to test in order to explain nature.
So there's only one question left, and you can explain or go into as detailed or as general as you would like. What can you recommend to young researchers?
I think what I always keep telling junior researchers is that they should read as much as they can in order to develop their own research objectives, goals, to find for them the most exciting topic that has not been addressed or that they would like to address in a better way. And then based on that, also to create their scientific niche. In order to do that, you have to be well informed about ecological theory, about what's already out there. You should talk to experienced researchers. You should talk to your peers in order to develop your skills. I think it's really important to not only work on hard skills, but also soft skills. And I'm always very happy to also then encourage my students to participate in graduate schools like WIDIF in order to have access to this broad range of skills. Yeah, and I think if you are really excited then about a topic, If you find this perfect match between the need to do some kind of research and your personal interest, then it's often like it's like an avalanche happening, and you cannot stop it anymore. And people tend to be successful with that.
So would you recommend them to start their own experiments, or rather maybe join global experiments or help with others?
Ideally, at the beginning of their career, they would probably do both. Yeah. So if they have the possibility to participate in networks, that's always nice to learn and also to engage in scientific endeavors. But at the same time, it's important to develop your own research. And this is not only piggybacking on things that are already there, but I think for me, it was extremely exciting as a PhD student to then design my first experiment or experiments. This is where I was really then on fire, and this is really valuable. And as soon as you can, I would also recommend to establish some longer term observation or experiment where you can always come back every year, every month, or whatever makes sense to then do repeated assessments of experimental or observational plots.
That makes sense, yeah. Thanks a lot, Nico.
Thank you very much, Nico.
That's it already? Okay, thank you for your questions. I think that was quite stimulating. I did not know that we would now design a global network of experiments, so exciting development.
Okay, Romy, so what have we learned today?
We have learned that there are many reasons to do experiments, actually. So first of all, it's important to entangle the different effects to actually understand what's going on in nature. And then it's also helpful to generate new hypotheses. And it needs always careful interpretation because of all the context and the conditions at local scale.
Yes, context dependency is an issue, I would say. But I do agree, and I really like the way that Nico approached this, because I do agree that experiments play their own role into all of this. Not only to validate the mechanisms of global or less global observation networks, but also to test the conditions that we now think are not probable and may be problem in the future, yeah, like, I don't know, extreme droughts and things like this.
Yeah, that was quite interesting that he mentioned that the design of an experiment over time just became relatively or too small to account for the actual effect that is happening in the future. So that's quite interesting to see that. And also now we have this ongoing research on the mixtures of drivers that act at one place and all these interactions. So there will be a lot of knowledge generated in the future that may change the way we have to look at our current experiments.
Yes, that's true. And actually, you mentioned something that comes from the GCF. So in the GCF, they estimated a specific extreme scenario of climate change that already passed. So they already don't, their climate scenario is already too mild to what is actually happening. Yeah. And at the time, it was an extreme scenario, yeah, or a more probable scenario. Yeah, that's cool.
Yes. Yeah, in addition, I also like the fact of the different scales in which experiments can happen. So, I mean, I know some of them already, like the grassland experiments or tree diversity experiments. But then there are also these at nano scales, like nano experiments or nanocosms and microcosms, and then also these global experiments. So there are all these different scales to account for different effects and study different mechanisms.
Yeah, but it's important, and Nico also mentioned that, it's important that we understand that an experiment, at least in my interpretation, an experiment is only useful if it, at some extent, represents the conditions or the situation, the natural situation that we are trying to describe. Because I don't think that a nano experiment, as you're saying it, can be representative of a process that is happening, that you are trying to look at the forest level. So if you're trying to look at something that happens at the level of an entire forest, and you design an experiment that occurs in a petri dish, I do think that something in between has to happen. So you have to look at something in between in order to make sure that this makes any sense.
Yeah, or it's only to get hypotheses. And actually there, these small scale experiments are really nice because they just, they are faster.
Yeah, sure.
Because if you look how trees grow, that can take ages. But if you can find that effect for microbes already, you get an idea how to design the next larger scale experiment.
Yes. And one thing that Nick also pointed out in the end that you asked, if young people should plan their own experiments, I was actually thinking that he would say no, but he said yes. And he said yes in a way that I really enjoyed, because he said yes, saying, well, you should fit your questions into something bigger so you are a bit more stable, maybe you have a bit more stability in your research agenda. But if you are really, you know, he said that he was on fire when he designed his own experiment. So it was really interesting for him when he started doing it by himself. And that, I think, is a really nice, positive way of looking at things.
Yes. And I also remember that he said that you can also address questions that were already addressed in papers. Just, you know, do it better because you think they did it wrong. So it's only because you find that one paper and you are like, oh, no, they already solved my question. It doesn't mean that you have to stop. You can just go on and try it again or confirm the findings as well.
That sounds like a plan, homie. I think we're it. And we see each other next time.
Yes, see you next time.